is conference committee. I think we had a couple. The major item that was left undone was the bonding issue. was the issue of the language for bonding, and I do see. Do we have the language that we're considering before us right now? Is that
833?
Okay, and I do notice that one of the people that we were kind of missing for comment last night is Peter Sousen from the. Is there anyone else whom we should? I noticed Senator Cohen is. Senator Cohen, is there anyone else that you have to speak on this bonding issue?
Madam Chair and members, I know that the conference committee is being very generous at this late hour, early hour with its time. The other person I wanted was the person you heard from yesterday briefly, Ms. Rahm. Apparently she's had some family problems and will be here a few minutes before 9. Okay. And I don't know. I mean, I know this bill has to be finished and gotten to the revised and all the rest of it, but that's the person I'd hope to have.
Okay. Well, we do have...
She was here last night until the committee adjourned, but...
We do have Mr. Sousen from the Finance Department, and I think we would like to hear from him.
Morning.
Oh, and Commissioner
Hanson.
Oh,
right. Like
wow. Okay.
I just show up at least once.
Who's ever starting?
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Tom Hanson, Commissioner of Finance, and with me is Peter Sousen, our Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management, who has been working on these issues, I believe, through every governor back to CUI. Mm-hmm. And I will, I'm available to augment his testimony, but I will turn it over to him.
Madam Chair and members of the Conference Committee, I'm Peter Sousen from the Department of Finance, and you're looking at revisions to Minnesota Statute 16A.695, and I'm just going to spend a couple minutes on the history of this and the evolution of the statute. In 1994, there was criticism that mainly nonprofit organizations and other non-governmental entities who wanted to be involved with state bond proceeds didn't know how to get into the process, and the Department of Finance in 1994 got through bond council a list of guidelines to help nonprofits and other private entities have access to bond financing through local governments. The guidelines were then converted into language, which was 16A695, passed in 1994. I have been working with on projects since that time, trying to help local governments, help nonprofits who are working through the local governments understand what the law says and how it works. Department of Finance recognized over the last few years that the law in many cases is hard to understand. In many cases it could be expanded so that the people who are going to use these bond proceeds better understand it. And there's some controversial things in there. There was controversial policy issues that we wanted to address. And so in, here in the 2007 session, we have done that. We had a bill that was introduced. I made a presentation on it to the House Capital Investment Committee. I don't believe I made a presentation in the Senate. And some of these issues have been addressed. You now have language in front of you. We, the Department of Finance, myself, and others have expressed concern that some of the language here is still confusing and may have constitutional problems. And it is our hope that if this is going to be passed, that we can work to get language that is agreeable so that we all understand how this is supposed to work and meet the constitutional requirements.
Well,
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Okay. Your name came up quite a bit in the last couple of days, and the thing that strikes me is that if you did have concern with this language, did you do anything to, you know, here we are at the last hour talking about it, did you make any efforts to get your concerns into the bill?
Madam Chair and Senator, this is somewhat of the language that was in the House bonding bill, and right after, I don't remember the dates, but after the House bonding bill was passed, I was in meetings with people from Fagerty and Benson as we dealt with these issues and tried to come up with compromise language that would work for the Department of Finance and for them. There was language, which is not the language you see here, but it did not make it into any of the bills. So, yes, we tried to work with the folks involved on this a month ago. We didn't conclude it, and there were no more meetings that were held.
Madam Chair, Senator, I think most of our discussions were with the bonding, both bonding committees and the bonding conference committee, but less so with the members on this conference committee.
Which is one of the reasons, I think, why some of us would prefer to have this handled in the bonding committee, conference committee, that, assuming that there's going to be another one. But I guess my obvious thing is we have this language before us. Do you have suggested amendments to this language, or do you have substitute language that you would like us to look at?
Madam Chair, I don't have that right now, no.
Last night we had a little bit of discussion on whether it was concerns of constitutionality, and of course we're not the ones to final determination of that either. The courts are, and or policy, and we are, I guess, involved highly in the between the executive and legislative branch on policies. Can you tell me, in your opinion, where you feel there is some unconstitutional or some constitutional problems?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, okay. What you have in front of you, lines 1.17 to 1.22 are a concern to us.
Madam Chair, to that particular point, we had testimony that there were two words that evidently tried to solve that problem. And that was the word, as I have it circled here, if I recall right, Madam Chair, on 1.19, the word subdivision. And I think the other word that was inserted that made a difference.
The difference between lessor and lessee.
Lessor and lessee, yes. And I think that was on page 3, line 3.30, the lessee. Do those address some of the concerns?
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, on 3.30, the subdivision 7 there, the words as lessee have been added. Now they were not in what was in the bonding bill, and with that we don't have a concern on that particular sentence. That was a concern to us before. It is not a concern now. But we still have concerns on 1.17 to 1.21 that bond finance property has to be publicly owned, public program, public oversight. And with this language, it gives the lessee the option of renewing a lease up to the full length of the life of the bond finance property, which in effect provides legally, as I understand, I'm not a lawyer, but legally can give ownership to the nonprofit. The renewal has to be at the option of the lessor, the local government. And the way I still read this, and I think others may read it, it gives the discretion of the renewal to the lessee, not the lessor.
Well, seems to me that when you have a lease, doesn't make any sense unless they both agree. They both have, the lease is for, I'm not an attorney and I don't deal with these issues, but just looking at what language means, it seems that a lease is an agreement between two people. We decide for the length of time of which it is. We decide on things like renewal terms. And then at any juncture that's been agreed on in advance, and I guess that's what happens when the bonds are let, of course I haven't even watched that closely, then the next step happens at the agreement of both of them. So if the language that there was concern with on page 3, and we do need to get back to Representative Solberg's concern about whether we're looking at policy or constitutional issues, but if the problem on page 3 with the addition of the language as lessee could solve the problem with that phrase, is there some solution that simple, maybe up to 4 words that could solve the problem on page 1?
Madam Chair, I'm sure there's a solution of a few words where it gives discretion to the lessor to renew the lease, which we feel is required to meet the constitutional test.
Well, Madam Chair, I feel a little bit uncomfortable trying that for us to determine constitutionality here. That is someone else that needs to do that and at a higher pay grade than us around the table. I think that, as I understand the problem, this has been wordsmith, and I've hear conflicting reports on both sides that those changes in words did meet the constitutional test.
Get the person who is an attorney into this.
Madam Chair, I believe Mr. Watson may have something to propose here, and he's probably the one attorney
who can do something. Before he comes up, let me just ask Mr. Sawson, doesn't the language on page 120.21 to 120.22 give the lessor enough power, and the lessor determines that the demonstrated use continues to carry out the program? Doesn't
Madam Chair, I'm not a lawyer, but I don't think that is strong enough language for the actions of the lessor.
Well, I guess we should listen. Another lawyer, Representative Cohen. We usually don't allow them.
I used to be a representative.
Oh.
Remember that?
Hey, we've already discovered. It's like once the governor, always the governor. You know, they still talk about Governor Quay and Governor Burns. We don't recognize the transition to that other body.
And Madam Chair, I still remain proud of it, particularly when I served on your division.
You can tell the story of Whiter. Whiter.
When it was a pretty disruptive time in the committee, and
that was the point when the Capitol Security came and asked, why didn't you call us before this started rather than after?
And then one of the people causing the disruption turned to all the rest of us on the committee and said, and you're just scared of that little lady over there, to which I said, yes, we are. Madam Chair.
You're not going to talk about Representative Bishop's scalping.
Okay. Madam Chair, couple of things. No question, Mr. Salzman has worked hard on this. I do need to point out, and I wasn't present at these meetings, so this is a little bit hearsay, but Mr. Hentges can testify to some of the give and take, that as some of this language was being worked on, Mr. Salzman was not at that time voicing disapproval. Second, last night, or yesterday, during the day, afternoon, whatever, Ms. Rankin from the Department of Finance indicated her concern was with the language referenced on page 3, not on page 1. 3, Mr. Watson has a suggestion relative to the page 1 concern that he thinks takes care of it.
Okay. And I understand, just to make sure at this early hour that we're all saying the same thing, that, Mr. Salzman, you think the language as lessee takes care of the page 3.
Madam Chair, I agree that takes care of that language.
Okay, good. Mr. Watson, are you giving us some?
Madam Chair, turning to the language on page 1, I think the primary problem is with line 1.20 and striking the words upon a determination and then inserting that the lessee, provided that the lessee demonstrates. I think, I'm just guessing, that if we were to return to the old language on that line, that is, reinstate the stricken language and delete the new language on line 1.20, I think that would solve Mr. Salzman's problem.
Yes. Well,
so that the determination is being made by the lessor that the use continues to carry out the governmental program and... Actually, we could also delete the new language on lines 21 and 22, and the lessor determines that the demonstrated use continues to carry out the program. Just return to the old language on lines 1.20 to 1.22 up to the period.
Does that meet your concerns, Mr. Stiles?
Madam Chair, yes, it does.
Madam Chair, Senator... Does that meet the concerns that you've expressed and others on this lawyers?
Well, I'm sure Representative, I believe so, although I've been very cautious in saying that I don't presume to have the legal expertise. I'm here as a legislator like all of you. I'm not sure if Mr. Henches would want to comment or Ms. Haney. Maybe I could ask Ms. Haney to comment. Would that be okay?
Sure.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. I'm Chairwoman. I'm Kathy Haney from Fagery & Benson, and I, too, am no bond lawyer. And, unfortunately, Ms. Rahm, who has been here the last couple of days, who's also not a bond lawyer but a darn good real estate lawyer and has worked with Steve Rochel of our office, who is a bond lawyer, neither were able to be here this morning. We understand Mr. Salson's concerns about if a property is to remain public property, which is required to do under the Constitution, there then needs to be not too much in that balance of discretion on the side of, you know, the tenant, basically, which is, for the most part, the nonprofit that we work with, the nonprofits that we work with. However, if you have total discretion in terms of the municipality or the local unit of government to remove that nonprofit from the building that they're in, whether it's the Guthrie Foundation or the Ordway or whomever, even though that nonprofit is continuing to carry on the governmental program for which you gave them bonding dollars, then you have a situation that is untenable for those nonprofits. In other words, if the Guthrie or the Ordway continues to do their programming that they were for which they were given bonding dollars, and for whatever reason the city decides, no, we don't want the Guthrie there anymore, we want Clear Channel to run it, and they have total discretion to remove that nonprofit, that then is a balance that is untenable when you're trying to put these projects together. So what we attempted to do was try to recognize, as necessary, you know, because we have to, and fairly so, that there's a constitutional requirement that the ownership must be public, and thus the owner must be able to drive probably those decisions. But we also wanted to protect the entity that's in those buildings. So what we attempted to say is that if they're continuing the governmental program for which they were given the money, and they both, you know, are able to make reasonable determinations to that effect, then the local unit of government loses some of its discretion. Like, represent kind of like the lease terms kind of thing that you're talking about.
Well, I guess I don't see why that shouldn't be upon a determination by the lessor that the use continues to carry out the governmental program. I mean, let's look at the other point, which is the Guthrie decides to stop doing plays and puts video games through the whole building. I mean, I kind of believe that wasn't what we agreed to do the bonding money for. And that's the kind of thing that, and I don't see why the determination rather than the demonstrate, you know, I understand why Mr. Sawson thinks that the determination language is better than the demonstration language, although, again, if it demonstrates to the lessor, to the satisfaction of the lessor, I'm not sure that that's less than determination. But you know, so I don't, I guess, yes, Ms. Haney.
Our attempt there was we require the lessee to demonstrate, and we say that the lessor determines. Yeah. In that next new language, that the demonstrated use continues to carry on the program. So again, we've tried to strike that balance, and then, you know, gone on to say, you know, if they do, you know, if the lessor and the lessee do not renew it, then there's ways out, and you know, you're not forcing the local unit of government to remain in the lease.
Okay. Mr. Sazen, you don't object to that further language about the way out if they don't agree?
I don't object if the discretion for renewing the lease is with the lessor.
Okay. Well, what if we put language that said we put back the upon a demonstration by the lessee upon a determination by the lessor that, why don't we just be, so the determination is still done by the lessor, which I understand is what Mr. Sousen wants, but why don't we put that the lessee has demonstrated that the use continues to carry out the governmental program. I don't, would that be something?
Madam Chair, I think that would be acceptable to me. The lessor makes determination. I think the lessee should be demonstrating to the lessor that they'll continue to carry out the government program.
Yeah. I think, you know, I guess I don't see that things are that far apart, and I don't see why this sentence can't be word smart. Mr. Sousen, I think, is making a very credible point that the lessor needs to have, when we're putting public money into something, that's why we don't give it directly to the nonprofit. That's why we say they have to go through a public entity. So when we're giving money to a public entity, the lessor, and I assume at some point there's some call off, some judgment of the state finance department comes into whether.
Madam Chair,
no, I'm concerned about a case where the lessor and the lessee may have some collision.
Madam Chair, it's not in what's in front of you, but another part of 16A 695 requires that the Commissioner of Finance approve all lease agreements.
Okay. Well, is that language that I said that I don't quite remember what I said? Is that okay? So we're putting back in upon a demonstration, a determination by the lessor, and then we're putting the other one back, that the lessee has demonstrated that the use continues the government program. Oh.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Rahm is here. Is that the... Senator Lawson.
I was going to suggest that Mr. Watson might be able to help you further with that. I think he's ready to.
You're right. Okay. Ms. Rahm. Someone needs to repeat where we've been. I guess, as I understand where we are at this point, we've agreed, looking at the language on page 3, Mr. Sousen agrees that by adding the lessee, as lessee, by adding that language in, that meets his concerns with the language on page 3. When we're on the language, we're trying to deal now with the language on page 1, from 1.17 to 1.22, and, Sousen, why don't you state what you want, and then...
Madam Chair.
So that I'm not interfering.
Members of the committee, the language has to state that the renewal of the lease has to be at the discretion of the lessor.
Okay. So then what we're looking at is crafting. We want to put back on 120, we wanted to put back the term upon a determination by the lessor, and we want to modify that to put in the lessee demonstrating that the program is continuing. So that's what we're looking at. But Mr. Sousen wants, the phrase that he wants, and we can discuss what modifications are appropriate, he wants it to say that he wants that somehow that sentence to have in it upon a determination by the lessor. So that's what's critical to him. And then we can work with how we want to wordsmith around that. Do you have any thoughts or suggestions on
it? Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think that's consistent with what we were intending to do here. What we were intending to do here was provide first that the lessee would step forward and make a demonstration that their use continues to meet the government program, and then the lessor, which would be the public entity, would make a determination that such use does in fact meet the government program. So I think that we're not in disagreement.
Okay. Mr. Watson, do you have the language that we want?
Madam Chair, to accomplish what you're trying to do, I think if you start on lines 20 to 22 by reinstating the stricken language on line 20 and deleting the new language on line 22 up before the period. So we get back to the old law, and then add on line 21 after that, the lessee has demonstrated that. So it would read, may allow renewal beyond that term upon a determination by the lessor that the lessee has demonstrated that the use continues to carry out the governmental program.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, is there anyone else who has to say yes?
Madam Chair, do we then?
Representative Solberg.
Delete the new language on line 120 also?
Yes.
Madam Chair, could the council repeat it one more time with what it would read?
It would read, but may allow renewal beyond that term upon a determination by the lessor that the lessee has demonstrated that the use continues to carry out the governmental program.
Is that maybe you should? The tape doesn't pick up. Not.
Madam Chair, I agree that meets our needs.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I believe that also meets the need to be.
Oh,
the
peace
in
the valley.
Senator Olsen, do you want to say something?
If I heard this right at the end there, it said continues to carry out the governmental program. But what if it's not a governmental program?
The governmental program is, I believe, the letting of the bonds is a governmental program.
Okay.
That's the only governmental program, is that a government agency has agreed with got state bonding funds, and then there, and whatever it was, we agreed to it.
My thought was, when you had mentioned the Guthrie switching to video games versus, I thought the program meant that kind of stuff. So thanks for that clarification.
Madam Chair?
I mean, if the Guthrie suddenly becomes a video games casino and someone brings a suit which says that state bond funds shouldn't be used for that, I think then you're asking for that demonstration that the legislature intent when they authorized the bonding funds and the Department of Finance, well, we'd then go back to the Department of Finance with that other phrase and saying that, yeah, that was okay, we intended that.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Watson.
Language on the governmental program is referring back to line 14, where lines 13, 14, and 15 say the lease or management contract may be entered into for the express purpose of carrying out a governmental program established or authorized by law and established by official action of the contracting public officer or agency. And we haven't in the past said that simply appropriating some bonds to an entity is sufficient to establish a program. In each of these cases, we have insisted, or bond counsel has insisted, on there being at least a sentence that says, like we did for the Guthrie, the city of Minneapolis may carry out a program of arts or museums or theater or whatever is appropriate to the particular project. So we do have at least a sentence in the law that describes what that program is, more than just you have some money.
Okay. So, in a more abstract case than this one, if, for example, the state gave money for, a wildlife preserve or for metropolitan regional parks, and the lessee decided that they wanted to do something very different, like create a video game palace or something like that. Would that be the kind of thing that could be complained about and go back to the...
Madam Chair, yes. In the case of the Science Museum, I think we passed a section that authorized the City of St. Paul to carry on a program of museum arts and culture.
Okay.
In Minneapolis, I'm not sure whether they needed any new law because they probably already had authority to do that kind of thing. In the MacPhail language, I think you'll see a sentence or two that talks about carrying on a program of music education or something like that. So if we've authorized the city to carry out a program of providing video games to its youngsters, then they could use it for that purpose.
Okay.
Otherwise, not.
Okay. Okay, great. Is there anyone have any other comments or questions, and we have the language. So we have this, the A33 amendment, and Senator Betzel.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A3 amendment as modified. 33. A33 amendment as modified by Mr. Watson, with two other provisions. Incorporate on from Article 2, R5, the Poet Laureate.
Thank you.
And from Senate language on R78, the budget trends study without any appropriation.
Okay. And I think, well, there might be some little cleanup stuff otherwise, but that's the major thing we're here to do today. Is there any further discussion of that motion, Mr. Watson?
Madam Chair, not to derail a perfectly satisfied...
We need another apostrophe?
Well, okay. It's sort of like that.
Okay.
If you look on page 3, line 29, the head note for subdivision 7, remember all the confusion that all of us had about what this subdivision was about, and was it the same kind of lease as in the subdivision 2? I just have a suggestion, and I want to run it by... Ms. Rahm and Mr. Sausen, if we could change that head note just a little bit and eliminate a lot of confusion. And my suggestion would be delete leased and insert ground lease of or for.
Which
line? So we refer to ground lease of state for bond finance property on line 29 in the head note.
Ground lease.
Would that help to clarify things and make it a little easier for the casual reader to understand that this is different from the other kind of lease?
Okay. I thought somebody once told me that had notes that meant nothing and had no bearing in law.
That is the law, Madam Chair. They mean nothing.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
You and I know that isn't really true. Because we were all confused about this. And I think we would not have been confused about this if the head note had been just a little bit different.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I believe on page 3, line 29, the head note, instead of lease to state, it's ground lease for.
Or I'm not sure.
What's the preposition?
Ground lease for.
Ground lease for.
Okay. Ground lease for. Bond finance property.
Just ground lease? Leave out the state bond finance?
Just ground lease.
So ground leased?
It's an adjective.
No. Well,
it doesn't exist.
That doesn't matter. That doesn't make sense. No, we're talking about the properties of the lease.
Yeah.
Lease for state bond finance property makes sense.
Ground lease for.
Okay. I'll incorporate that, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Betzel incorporates that into the amendment. Is there any further discussion of the Betzel amendment? Motion.
Sure.
Yes. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion passes. Okay. Are there any other little things? Oh, there's what? Okay. Oh, yes.
And then, term members, thank you for your time.
Okay. All right.
I have one. You gave me one. Yeah, I've seen it.
I believe it is.
Did not sit well all day long after that. Okay, Senator Betzelt, I think this is the language that we think we agreed on, with the understanding that we're going to have a significantly higher appropriation of up to $4 million in the next capital bonding bill.
Madam Chair, last night we did adopt, this morning I guess, we did adopt some language for this bill for $750,000 to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for a facilitative process. In discussions with the Department of Administration of the CAP Board, they wanted to clarify the language that it must be conducted in cooperation with the CAP Board and the Commission Administration. And I think that is consistent with the understanding that we had this morning. So I would move the modified language as it's been distributed for that.
Senator Riff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if it's possible to... it seems to me that $750,000 might not need all of that in order to complete this project and process. And I was wondering if is there any way that we could say that the money that is not expended would revert to whatever the authority would be that could go forward with the project. Representative Solberg had mentioned that with the LCCMR that they used a facilitator, and as I understand it, that was $100,000 to $150,000, and if we were using that kind of approach here, I mean, if it takes $750,000, fine, but if we don't use that, it would seem to me that if it was linked to the whatever funds were not expended wouldn't just stay at the LCC for some other program, but that maybe would be available to forward whatever plans this group comes up with, whatever it is. I mean, I really mean that, whatever it is, for the project itself.
Yes. Okay. Representative Solberg.
Well, I think as I understand some of the negotiations last night, it was suggested that it be $100,000 to $150,000 for this process, and I thought
I wasn't here, so
well, yes. I understand it. But I thought that the agency said that they needed more money than that because of the kind of the expanded process. And
there was, all right, if that if it involves the technical help, et cetera, that they would need, I understand that. But if that's the understanding, that would be available with designers and engineers and so forth involved in the process. Okay.
And right. Senator Rest, there was also, since this is also, I mean, not exactly contingent because it's kind of pre-contingent on this issue being dealt with considerably more money in the capital bonding bill, you thought any modification of this language could also occur in that bill. You know, if we needed to free up this, we could refer back to that.
Thank you. I understand.
Okay. Any other? Okay. Senator Betzel.
I'll renew my motion, Madam Chair.
Okay. All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay.
Madam Chair. I've got one item I'll call to your attention. I think it's more of a cleanup. You go to Article R2 on page R39. We had the House and the Senate had similar provisions. We've adopted the House one on the reduction of some of the overhead. We had eliminations of deputies and so forth in the House. Proposal, which we've gone along with, was to just eliminate positions. If you look at the language from the Senate that's on from 25.33 to 26.6, this was part of what we had proposed in the reductions, basically, so you couldn't they couldn't get around it by just appointing somebody in a temporary unclassified service. Well, there's an 18-month cap, and I think that would be consistent with what I think with the goal we had here. So I'll move the, let's see, this is the whole, let's see, what,
25.
Section 17, 25.32 to 26.6. As I say, I think this is just more of a clarification of the what we'd already adopted.
Okay. Any House members see that? Any discussion of that amendment? Well, I certainly, looks good to me. Okay, all those in favor of that amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. There's another one which, you know, may or may not, were critical. On R36, the OET fees for licensing system, this was something we know we're dramatically underfunding what the governor asked for in OET, and this was a suggestion that was made that might get some of these projects done. I made some very bad analogies, which derailed it the other day. So without making those bad analogies, this one was R36. It's the OET fees for licensing system. I don't know if you look at that, if you have any problems with that language.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if somebody could just kind of, I don't remember, was this something that was just, I don't remember this part of the proposal
well,
we had before us, but...
It was one of the ones that we gave you on this long list that you didn't
right.
say anything about.
But I don't think we understood this. Okay. When we certainly did hear from OET on their licensing thing. I suspect this is what the House had looked at and proposed as an alternative, and maybe you could just talk about it just a little bit more to make me make sure I fully understand
okay.
what we're doing here.
Could you go?
Madam Chair and members. The first part of House Section 72 on page R36 authorizes the Chief Information Officer in OET to enter into a contract in which the vendor would finance all or part of the cost of system development. This was a concept you discussed the other night when Representative Winkler was explaining that. The next part allows the Chief Information Officer to assess a fee for business and occupational licenses to develop a licensing system, the electronic licensing system. Any fee would be submitted to the LAC for review. It would then be established under the rulemaking process, the expedited rulemaking process in section 14.389, where it says section 16A.1283 does not apply to fees. That means the legislature would not have to approve the fees before they took effect. And then the last sentence appropriates to OET the fee revenue it receives under this section.
Senator Riff?
Madam Chair, why is this a good idea?
Because it's a way of financing all this $52 million that we were asked for from OET that we didn't do.
And
we think that there are a lot. It's a way of getting outside help in doing technology and then recovering it by fees. And allegedly, in some of these... Well, let me turn to this process. What?
Who would control this process?
OET, I think. Let me switch to my more knowledgeable colleague, Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I don't think any of us actually believes that characterization, but... Senator Rest, this is not an uncommon thing to do with IT systems for government entities. And the basic concept behind it is that the system that you're putting into place creates a certain amount of increased efficiency or value add to the organization, or could increase the revenue that entity is bringing in. And the contract is simply written so that the value delivered is paid back, a portion of that is paid back over time to the vendor in exchange for a lower upfront license and implementation fee. I guess it is a form of financing in a sense, but it's really more of a long-term partnership between the vendor and the government entity to make sure the system works over time. And you have to have very good service level agreements and other things in place, and it has to be managed well. But in those situations, you can actually have the two entities working together over a long period of time to deliver on the value that the new system is supposed to be putting into place.
In terms of some of the language that we looked at for the capital financing, it's kind of like the risk the at-risk project manager.
Madam Chair, I've got a question about one word here that stands out. If you look at the sentence on line 55.17 and 59.18, before implementing a fee under this section, the director must submit the proposed fee to the Legislative Advisory Commission for its review. It doesn't say approval, it says review. So all they have to do is just submit the, and the LEC might say, we don't like it, well, sorry, we sent it to you. Okay. I think review ought to be approval.
That's okay.
Madam Chair, I think you might have a separation of powers issue there. The legislature, LCC, and many times is for our review.
Yeah.
But we cannot reject something that the subcommittee.
What you can do is you can put in the statutory reference. Somehow that happens.
Mr. Watson may help us on that, if we could, or at least comment on the concern that I expressed.
Yes.
Join us at the table. That's where you should be sitting anyway.
Yeah.
Permanently.
Madam Chair, that LCC reference would be section 3.30.
Okay.
And they do review of spending proposals all the time, and the level of review, the method of review, depends on the amount of spending involved, $10,000, $100,000, different levels for review. I'm not sure that normal LAC review process would fit in here. Unless, I suppose, if we were thinking of the fee as raising some revenue, and if it's going to raise more than $10,000, then there's one level of review. If it's less than $10,000, a different level of review. So that might work. But as Representative Solberg has said, there are constitutional problems with the separation of powers problems with giving it final approval authority.
Which is what I was going to suggest, the language of going back to 3.30.
Yes.
Because that says, so if we can, and we can use for review, what?
Madam Chair?
Mr. Watson?
So the amendment would be on line 55.18 before the period, insert under section 3.30.
But yeah, but Madam Chair, if we have a process already in statute, I think we ought to use it.
Yes.
You know, so that we are consistent. Okay. I still can't hear.
What?
Just a second.
Okay.
Okay.
If we're going to do it, I just
assume
do it right.
Okay, yeah.
I think we're going
to. Okay, well, Madam Chair, I'll move the language then, and but with the incorporation on line 55.18 before the period, as Mr. Watson indicated, under section 3.30.
And I think if we need some interpretation, that's also going to include, besides revenue spending, that besides spending will also include fees that will result in revenue. I think we can probably get that in somewhere.
Sure.
Okay. Heard the motion by Senator Betzolt. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No. Aye.
Motion passes.
What? Division.
Division being requested.
No, I just thought I.
Yes. All right. No. All right.
No. I thought I heard you said that the motion passed.
I did.
Yeah.
You call it first amendment.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All those in favor of the motion, raise their hands. Oh, guess I missed on that. All right. Are there, with the people who... Remember, we've talked that we've had two things. It's really, even though it was written as one paragraph, there are two parts of it. But someone who voted against it, come up with something. Because I think we need, you know, one of the things I think we need this is I think we need this because of the way that we've dramatically cut the governor's request from the Office of Technology. And this is an attempt to make up for some of that. So does anyone who voted against it, too, I guess, we need.
Madam Chair, I just don't think it's a good idea. I mean, I don't know how to cure it. I don't think it's a good concept, and I just not convinced. I mean, it's not a, you know, I don't not have any passion about it. I just don't think it's a good idea.
Well,
I don't know what the
Senator Rex,
and that
there are two
just
sections.
Sealed it.
Well, there are two sections of it. One of the ones that they may, one of the ones to contract for the state information systems development in which the vendor finances all or part of the cost of system development is one sentence, and then the second sentence is the assessment of fees. Is there, there's a real division between those two, Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, thank you. I think for me, I just had a bad taste in my mouth when this presentation was given to the committee and the Senate. It seemed like a really slick presentation, and it almost felt like a used car salesman type thing. And I suspect if Representative Winkler was presenting something, it would have been presented in a different manner. But the way that this was presented, I felt, you know, these guys are big-time money, and they're going to make big money off of this. So I was wondering, when you mentioned the other day about the constitutionality of bonding for, you know, non-capital equipment, you know, I'd rather go a route like that and have the fees go to pay the bonds or borrowed money. But I don't think we're going to get anywhere on that. So, but I just don't support this way of raising revenue to pay off the business that's fronting the money.
Is there any controls that you would be willing to put into it? I mean, we've really, you know, I do think I don't always agree with everything that the governor says, but I do think his proposals for saying that we need much more, and just looking at the same problems that we're getting into now with maps, that the point is that none of us, everyone agrees that maps, which is this incredibly important procurement system, which is 20 years old, so, you know, as I say, we should be using bonding money for it, is needs $54 million to do it, to other than patch it or have contingency money, and nobody, not the governor, not the House, not the Senate, has proposed that. Everyone, I think, has agreed that that sum of money is probably right, and nobody has come forward with that. And if that breaks down, we're in really serious problems. So I don't expect this to be used often. I just thought we would just put in another tool in the arsenal because we're not ready to put the money in. And I agree with you. You know, I would like to look at the bonding issue when I kept going around and saying that I wanted that part of the bonding amendment last night. Everybody just kind of hammered me into a hole and said, you know, we're trying to do this word by word, and you're trying to put in a whole new concept that that we don't know goes on anywhere else in the world, and you can't do it. But so I backed off on doing that, although I'm still interested. And what? But the point is, you know, and we may be coming. I just wondered if there's any part of this that the people who objected to could see salvaging, because we do need some more tools to that. And we're not, you know, we've all admitted we're not willing, by lack of action, we're not willing to put the money into technology systems that we need. And I don't, you know, I understand what you said about the people. Did you hear the same presentation, I think, that we did? And I understand what you're saying about this. But I wonder if there's some more control words that you'd like to put into it. I mean, I'm just concerned that one of the things that we've done, and I know, you know, I've told people that we're not construct this bill as if we think it's going to be vetoed, and if we think that it's going to, and that we're going to have to redo it. But one of the complaints, we should always refer back to the governor's letter, but one of the complaints from the governor was that he did some minimal, I don't know if he used that word, but he did some stuff on, that we didn't follow his advice on what he gave us with technology. And it's one of the few places that I agree with him, and then I think in some places like maps we should have done even more, but we just couldn't unless he agrees with some other stuff. And the and so, you know, what I think this section gives us, I would be happy to hear any suggestions from the opponents.
Sorry.
As to what would make them more comfortable with it. This gives us something we can point to and say, okay, we didn't fund all your technology money, but we gave you a tool that we think hasn't been used enough. It's the other thing I wanted to, we didn't put words in to do it, but I said it because I think there are words in the compliance, the tax compliance section, where they ferociously come and told us that we can't use the amount of money that you give us and we can't get that level of compliance. And I said to them, and I've said for that, but we didn't write it into law. Maybe we will if, you know, we have sufficient problems to have to do another bill, that you haven't used the tools we've given you to solve the problems that you say you have in them. Or do you need more tools? Do you need the ability to pay higher salaries to tax auditors? Need the ability, you know, we've given you in language. It tells you you're supposed to do things for people telecommuting. We've already established one office in Ely, which is extremely effective. Do we need to establish other out-state revenue tax compliance? Out-of-state. Well, B. We probably can put, what, how many? Three more offices, three or four more offices for various districts. I don't want one in Minneapolis, but various districts in the state to do it. So, you know, I think it helps us. If we're expecting, for the reasons that the governor gave us, we're expecting a possible veto, to have things we can point to say, hey, okay, we didn't give you the money, but we gave you the tool. And I don't know if this is a perfect tool. I would never even suggest that. But I think that there's something in this that can be constructed just to give us that argument, even if we never use it, because the governor vetoes the bill. So I just wish people could spend a few minutes looking at it, you know, and what they feel take out what they feel uncomfortable about, but give us something along that language that gives us that tool. I don't know. Does anyone? I can't. Is there anything?
I don't know. Madam Chair, if perhaps we could just think about it for a few minutes, and maybe if you want to come back to it, we may have a few more things we can clean up here.
Sure. Okay. I don't feel passionate about this the way I did about some other issues. I just think that
point,
it's
useful. Madam Chair, one of the things that, if you don't mind, we can just take a quick diversion here on an easy one. One of the things that I indicated the other night that we would be willing to go along with, which was not adopted last night, I believe, the building replacement funds. This is something the Department of Administration had an interest in. And the Senate actually passed Senate File 1981, and you may recall that we did adopt it. Okay, I guess it's off. We've adopted it. Okay, never mind. Okay, that's off.
Senator Betzel, there was another issue that House Television had brought to us about the language that they wanted before the contract negotiations on carrying legislative. Did we? I don't know who had it. I don't know. Okay. The language, this is the language. This is language that has been suggested and Barry LaGrace is here if we wanted to talk to us, suggested to, relating to the $9 million public TV digital conversion grants. It says, in order to qualify for these grants, member stations of the Minnesota Public Television Association using funds appropriated to the legislature for this purpose must broadcast all legislative television program distributed to them by the House and Senate.
Well, Madam Chair, it seems to me they'd have to be pretty hard up for programming. I'm not sure they are that hard.
Well, maybe you can have Mr. LaGrace tell us what he thinks. Not my idea. And just the transmission. Maybe you have Mr. LaGrace tell us why I think it's a good idea.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, I'm Barry LaGrave. I'm the Director of House Public Information Services. Our office, along with Senate Media Services, provides legislative television coverage to the citizens of Minnesota. One of the challenges that we've always had is that typically our broadcast contract with Twin Cities Public Television is 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. We regularly run into the situation at 5 p.m. where we go off the air, sometimes in the middle of committee coverage or floor session debate on sometimes minor issues, what some may seem as minor issues, sometimes during major issues. It's always been a challenge with people that contact our office. They don't understand why we can't continue past 5 p.m. and finish up the debate. Likewise, on the other hand, I know that Twin Cities Public Television, that's an issue for them because they have a children's block at 5 p.m. So, in summary, I mean, the LCC uses public funds to provide public policy debates to the citizens of Minnesota. In order for residents to get full value of that legislative television coverage and the time, effort, and money that go into it, the goal is to, if the Minnesota Public Television Association is indeed going to get the $9 or $9.75 million, is that maybe a small accommodation would that be that full television coverage produced by the legislature is provided to the citizens in its entirety. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not a situation where they would do it for free. We would still use the money that's appropriated to the LCC to establish a contract for statewide public television coverage on the Minnesota Public Television Association stations. It would just guarantee that we would not be cut off in the middle of significant debates at 5 p.m. We do have certain nights where we can go past 5 p.m., but a certain limited number. For example, last week, two instances, in the middle of an eight-hour debate on the smoking ban in the House, we had to go off the channel at 5 p.m. because we were not able to use the preemption. Also last week, we missed the final vote tally on the House's omnibus tax bill by about 20 seconds. We have a limited number of preemptions we can use over the two-year contract. We try to use those very judiciously for high-profile debates. We save a lot of them for the end of the session, starting probably this Saturday, so we pattern them out so we don't get that last day of session and go off the channel at 5 p.m. So this is not a situation where we're asking for free legislative television coverage. We are still entering into a contract that will probably be around $1 million for the next two-year period with the MPTA for statewide coverage on public television. It's just a request for accommodation that the full value that we put into legislative television coverage is provided to the citizens at home who aren't able to be here and really take part and observe the legislative process.
Okay, so, Ms. LaGrace, you're telling me I've got my grandchildren sitting there waiting for Sesame Street or whatever else is going on at 5 o'clock, and I'm supposed to tell them watch the smoking ban coverage instead.
Yes.
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair, I'm convinced. I think we ought to grant them the ability to do that kind of negotiation. They're not talking about preempting for an hour while everybody's in recess. They're talking about preempting on a very limited basis, so that indeed the vote on that bill could have been witnessed rather than going to the Weather Channel abruptly. I don't think that was in the public service, and if you've got language to accomplish that limited kind of negotiation. I think we should support it.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Oh.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
We'll
get it.
Senator Cooper.
Okay. Senator Cooper.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I don't know, you know, how Twin Cities public television operates, but I know in our area, well, public television broadcasting is actually heavily influenced by the people who view public television, and so, you know, probably more than any other instance, you know, it's governed by the, you know, by the membership, the people who belong. So, you know, I guess, you know, from my perspective, if that's something that the viewers want and something that the viewers ask for, then we should go ahead. But, you know, I think that ought to be determined by the station rather than by the legislature. So I would speak against the amendment.
I think, Senator Cooper, the problem is that people do complain. But, you know, it's like it's happened in an instant. A debate is cut. You know, it's not like it's something that's going on and on. And I think Mr. LeGray's told us it's a very you know, we've given two examples of this session. It isn't something that would be done all the time. And it's the kind of thing that when it happens, you complain about it, but you don't go to the board meeting, you know, it's over. It happened and you're irritated, but you don't know anything. You don't understand that it's something that could be prevented or so forth. I think as he described it, and as he also described, you know, we'll get the language in front, and maybe, again, if someone wants to wordsmith the language, you know, if someone just the suggestion that this is something that would be rarely used, but that the rigorous cutoff time certainly works to the disadvantage of...
Well, Madam Chair, I guess, you know, I would just disagree with that. And, okay, you know, maybe you've got the support to pass it. But, you know, I think if there are an adequate numbers of people watching it who are requesting that over some other form of programming, I think they'll get that whether we pass a law to govern that or not.
I think Senator Cooper's suggesting if we had better ratings, you know, it would not be an issue. we need to maybe work on that part.
Okay, maybe we need to let Senator Cooper talk more than Senator Pogomoff. Improve our ratings.
Madam Chair and members, understand that these situations where we have programming past 5 p.m. are not that common. But we do have four sessions that run unexpectedly long. The new committee structure in the House allows for a 4 to 5:30 p.m. committee block, and it's not a situation where we can take that unaired portion and air it the next day because we have a whole other set of committee broadcasts and floor sessions. So the instances, I think we've had 17 or so instances on the House side this year where we've gone off the air at 5 p.m. I don't know the number as far as on Senate legislative coverage, but we've got about 17 this year.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess when I was a member of the House, which hasn't been that many years ago, I noticed that the debate became much more circumscribed when they went off the air. So that might be an advantage, too. If they can broadcast it the next day, it might be much shorter and still arrive at the same result.
Well, Senator Cooper, the problem is that the public broadcasting isn't as noticeable, and maybe we ought to have some real signal so that people know that. What would always inspire the debates was those really hot lights from the kind of major media people, and what might inspire some of the timing of the debate. And that usually takes place kind of before the 6 o'clock news or the 10 o'clock news on bad days. Senator Betzel. Representative Tulsi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Mr. Straczynski wanted to contribute something to this discussion if we have the time to allow that.
Senator. Okay, we'll call up Mr. Straczynski and Senator Betzel.
I have a question. When we have, say, the Senate in floor session or the House in the floor session, and
each body's debate, what process has gone through to decide which one would be distributed to public television? I mean, somebody has to say this is a better debate than the other one. What vetting process do we go through when you got a couple to choose from?
But they always went to the house.
Madam Chair, members, that discussion is something that takes place on an ongoing basis with the Director of Senate Media Services, Steve Senek, and myself. We're the editorial producers of the programming, and we try to create a broadcast day where we have an equal number of hours of House and Senate coverage, equal number of high policy debates. Sometimes it's a real juggle of who's on at what time, and sometimes unexpected things happen. So it's a coordination between Senate Media Services and House Public Information Services.
Madam Chair, I can probably relate a discussion I had with Mr. Senek of the Senate Media Services kind of on this issue. He did point out to me that just by the way the Senate schedule has been structured, we have a lot more of our, I think he said, a lot more of our interesting committees in this later time slot in the afternoon, and frankly the time slot that I'm in is rather a dull one, and so we never get broadcast, but there's not a lot of choices, so we don't get a lot of TV time. But I think we do important work. We're just not worthy for prime time, I guess.
Madam Chair and members, and actually with the recent change in the structure of meetings in the House, we've moved from a 3 p.m. floor session up to a noon on Monday and 10 a.m. on Thursday. So we've avoided a lot of these post 5 p.m. issues with the restructuring of the House floor session meeting times.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the Conference Committee, I'm Bill Straczynski, and I represent Minnesota Public Television Associations, and we understand the concerns here. We're kind of in the middle, again, sometimes frequently caught between the House and Senate. This, in the past, as Mr. LaGrave has referenced, has been handled on a contractual basis. And we've assured both the House and Senate, we've met with them, when we move to the digital environment, that we can make more time available so we avoid some more of these kinds of pitfalls. But the concerns I think we would have, basically, it says must broadcast all legislative programming distributed to the station. And if you decide that you want this conference committee broadcast, we'd be going until 1 o'clock in the morning this morning.
Fortunately, you can't do it from this room.
Pardon me?
You can't do it from this room. But, I mean, we thought that was one reason why this conference committee was assigned to this room.
Certainly, I think it's most interesting, Madam Chair, myself, and I was frustrated the other day, frankly. I was watching the debate on the tax bill when it did go off the air at 5 o'clock. I think we can avoid a lot of those kinds of things in the future, and let me just say that we assure the legislature we will continue to work with House and Senate staff. This isn't going to happen until another session. We have another contractual period we have to put together with respect to times available, coverages, what exactly we're all going to be doing. You're going to do, the Senate's going to do, and public television, what they can do with all the stations statewide. It's another dynamic that didn't exist before. We have now six entities that are going to be carrying this programming statewide to everybody in Minnesota. But they have unique experiences and difficulties, perhaps in one station or another, which we're not aware of yet, but we have to talk about that. If they got something that they have to broadcast out in Appleton, Minnesota, for example, it might not be, it would interrupt legislative coverage. This would prohibit that from happening if it's something of a local emergency or something of local significance. So we're a little, I'm not saying I'm opposed to it, I'm a little hesitant about this kind of broad sweeping language at this time. Remind the legislature and this committee that we have another year before this is going to take effect, and I'd like an opportunity at least to have the people who specifically been involved in this over the years for public television, which has been one station, but now it's going to be expanded to six, to be involved in some serious discussions about this, and we'll assure through contracts what times will be available, more times. We do know that there's going to be more time available. Hopefully we can avoid some of that in the future. But, I mean, that's my initial read on it, Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, a little hesitant about the broad sweeping nature of having to broadcast all feeds that we happen to get.
Sure. Mr. Straczynski, I really understand the concern, and I think it agrees with Senator Kubley's concern about the maybe overreaching of that last phrase. Is there some wordsmithing of that so that we can get some report back to us? You know, I know we're all focused in on thinking about it this year, and you say it's not a problem until next year. Is there something we can put in that can clearly bring this to our attention next year? or is there something that raises this issue in connection with the grants, but isn't quite as
Madam Chair, I, unlike a lot of issues that you know we may want to put in the bill just to remind us, this is an ongoing thing, and I don't think we're going to quite forget about it. I think it'll be still in our memory. I kind of agree with Senator Coonley and Mr. Straczynski's point. Maybe this is a little overly prescriptive, and the technology is getting there. I mean, with all the cable systems available and so forth, you know, we may be at a point where this is not an issue, and in fact, they're begging us to have more committee hearings so they can fill more time. But I think we ought to go cautiously on this one right now.
Madam Chair, we're pretty excited about this opportunity ourselves. The rural stations are very excited about this opportunity, but I assure you, it's a contractual matter. All the parties have to agree, or it's not going to happen anymore.
Okay, well,
thank you.
We'll trust you to bring this back to us next year, and if there's no further objection, we'll lay this.
Thank you, Madam Chair members.
Oh, that's right. You know, there are public television, as public radio has gone to these things that are just about like commercials. Shouldn't we be doing that for the legislative coverage too? And then we could check the House ratings versus the Senate ratings and all kinds of, and the House. And the sponsorship of the one, and we could argue for a better committee room because we're better than the tax committee. Okay. Is there any other Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, on your licensing system, after consulting with Peter Watson, I think that if we were able maybe just to work with the Office of Finance and the Office of Enterprise Technology to see if revenue bonds might be suitable for this, and then a fee system devised to pay off the revenue bonds, because I suspect this stuff will have a 10-year life, so they might qualify for revenue bonds, and maybe that'd be the process over the interim to work with those two departments to see whether or not we couldn't just issue revenue bonds and use the fees generated to pay off the bonds.
Yeah, that's good. Mr. Watson, do you have language that would... Since your name was used. You have.
Madam Chair, no, I didn't have language. I just have years of experience working during the interim to write bills. That is. I'm not sure that doing this requires language in this bill. That's what I was thinking.
Well, the reason I was interested in getting some language in the bill is to be able to point. If we have problems with this bill in the executive branch because of our lack of funding for technology, I want something in the bill that we can point to that was saying, here was a tool that we gave you to, you know, to deal with the problem that we underfunded technology. And I say it's one of the few, I'm sure I could, if I thought hard, I could find other areas I agree on with the governor, but it's one of the few places where I really agree with you. So,
Madam Chair, the concept, I agree, you know, that we would, you know, front the money to get the equipment and then use fees generated to pay for it. I just disagree with a private entity doing it because they're not doing it for free. They're going to have a profit in there. Whereas if the state did it, you know, they would just be looking at covering the bond costs and recouping the expenditures. So I think at this point, you know, maybe just talking to those departments and, you know, not having it in law, I think is okay. I understand also what you're saying about pointing to, you know, we have it in there to do this, but maybe we can just move forward as a recommendation or something.
Well, for example, if we just put the first sentence, the sentence as a placeholder, the state chief information officer may, so it doesn't say must.
Madam Chair, I'm afraid you stated earlier that this would be probably a one-time thing, but I believe that with the tightness of money, that if this could really blow up. So I would prefer to, you know, maybe just work with those departments and see if they can actually do this. If the state could issue revenue bonds and pay them back, I mean, that might be the answer, but I don't really think it needs to be in law. That's my opinion, but...
Well, I gave you my reason why. You know, not this necessarily, but are we going to get some...
I got rolled. I don't know.
What?
I got rolled.
No, no.
I made a note of this.
Bring you back to reality.
The land sale deadline on this, the land sale deadline on this is some chunk of, but we might have to get to that line. What? Okay. Representative Ertles asked the Department of Admin down for a question. And I think maybe the language. And Commissioner, while you're coming, did you give us some language, which I'm sure is somewhere in this pile, about the land sale deadline, and you wanted something done on that?
Madam Chair, Dana Badgerow, Commissioner of Administration. Yes, Madam Chair. Last year's, 2 years ago, the biennial budget required us to sell $6.4 million of surplus land to balance the budget. Regrettably, we've been unable to do that. We're about $4.4 million short. Although we have several large transactions that are expected to close this summer, they're not likely to close by the end of the biennium, and what we're asking for is simply an extension until the end of the next biennium to be able to complete the land sale requirement. And we did provide language.
Manager.
Okay.
Do we?
I guess I'd want to see the language because...
Yes. I think it's just... changing a date.
I think you need to do more than change the date, because I think the language also said last year or 2 years ago that if you didn't sell it, you had to take it away from your base or something like that. The agencies had to eat it. So I think if you're going to extend it into the next biennium, you need to have something that cancels that from this biennium that we're in right now.
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, my understanding is that the Department of Finance fund balance report in February actually showed this deficiency in the forecast. So it has already been taken into account in our year-end balances. So the books are balanced. We still want to meet our contractual or statutory requirement and sell the land, but we do need an extension. Particularly the Anoka Treatment Center has been extraordinarily complex. with county and city issues. And when we have sold that, we will come much closer to meeting the goal, not quite meeting it, but it, we just need into the summer to make that closure.
Madam Chair?
Senator Rick?
Madam Chair, Commissioner, I'm looking at this screen sheet thing. This is not codified law, so it's just going back and changing the laws of 2005. Is that correct?
It was a rider, I think, in 2005.
Commissioner?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Rest, that's correct.
So do we have that rider language that we could just change the date on, Madam Chair?
In terms of what she's proposing.
Madam Chair, can I ask fiscal staff if my question is correct or not, or concerns?
Madam Chair, members, I think Department of Finance could also clarify this. I think, actually, that the cost of this is not currently reflected in the fund balance. The way that we would track it is actually a cost in fiscal year 2007, which would, the effect of that would be to reduce the balance that's carried forward into the 08-09 biennium, but then we would be tracking additional revenues in 08-09 to offset that reduction, but I don't know.
I'm satisfied with that. That's very good.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
We're getting Representative Bertel.
Thank you. I wonder about the sourcing language. I understand went through relevant committees before and didn't get off general orders. If you had any comments on that.
Madam Chair and Representative Bertel, I hate at this very last minute to bring up one last nigging detail, but we did have in the House version of the bill, the sourcing, strategic sourcing language, which did pass both houses last year and was on general orders on the last day of the session and fell victim to that end of session rush and did not get finally passed. These are relatively minor but very important changes in our sourcing authorities to enable us to implement the Drive to Excellence initiatives. We've worked out all of the issues with industry groups, particularly.
Was there a page in the House bill? Is it in?
Madam Chair, I have actually the section numbers, but it's on page R28 through 30, R31 through 34, R35, and R36, and sections particularly are R51 through 60, 62 through 67, 69, and 71.
And this was...
Madam Chair, Commissioner, could you repeat the section numbers again?
Madam Chair. I could be happy to read them again.
We have it on the green.
Not everyone has the green sheet, Madam Chair. 51 through 60. We skipped 61 because that's the searchable data.
Starting on R28.
Yes, Madam Chair. R51 through 60, 62 through 67, 69, and 71.
Madam Chair, in fact, I think I introduced it in the Senate, and it was a late agency bill. That's why I didn't get around to it.
This is, Len, getting back to sections that we haven't dealt with, but we've explained the problem of... The fact is that agencies need to get bills into us early. So, but anyway.
Madam Chair, I agree entirely.
Okay.
It was thoroughly heard in the House this year.
Yeah, and if, Madam Chair, it would have gotten heard in the Senate if I gotten in earlier. So.
I think it's technical stuff.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I truly do believe it's non-controversial.
What does it do?
Madam Chair, it gives us expanded authority, for example, in the ability to ask for best and final offers on complex procurements. It expands reverse auction to certain kinds, additional kinds of service contracts, but not including engineering and architectural contracts, which was problematic for the industry. It allows for, although we may have implied authority to negotiate following receipt of proposals after a request for proposal, it statutorily recognizes that we may then negotiate with vendors. It requires, if If I choose to do so, it requires an agency to take delegated authority for small purchases, a variety of other small definitional items. It's a whole package that was worked out by a multi-agency team as part of the Drive to Excellence.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, this was passed by both bodies last year, is that what the...
No, it was on general.
I'm sorry, but passed by the committee.
Without controversy.
No. Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Betzel, right. Correct. It was just within a hair's breadth of being passed in both houses at the last minute.
Okay. I'll move the... I don't have those sections written in front of me. Does somebody have
51 them? Through 60.
50, okay. Where am I? 51 through 60, 62 to 60 through 67, 69 and 71. That covers that?
One technical comment.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members, Commissioner Badgerow, I think that in the repealer sections at the end of the House, I think that the department bill had two technical repealers that were associated with this. I'll have to check, but I think the repeal of 16C.055 and 16C.08 subdivision 4A were part of that bill as well. And I don't know if the Commissioner has the bill in front of her, but if the conferees would like, we can see if those repealers were associated with that bill in House File 2065. I believe that they may be needed to make it work the way the Commissioner intends.
Madam Chair, I'll include them with the understanding that if they are completely unrelated to this, that they are not to be added to the bill. If they are part of it, yes, obviously include them. But since we don't have that right now, I'll move to include them with discretion of staff to remove them if they are not part of this.
Heard the motion of Senator Betzel. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, we have the sale of land, which merely amends Minnesota laws 2005. And I believe it would just extend the expiration date from June 30th, 2007 to 2009. And I'd move that.
Okay. And Representative Solberg is giving the thumbs up on that. All those in favor of the Betzel motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Is there
thank
anything
you very
else?
Much, committee members.
Anyone can think of. Is there anything else for anyone in the audience? The croning side pocket model. Women are always at such a disadvantage. We don't have jackets that have those. We should have special legislative tailoring for all women's jackets to give us that side pocket, called the croning side pocket.
Oh, you've done quite well, Madam Chair.
Is there any... anything else? Is there anything that anyone in the audience would like to say? Okay.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll move that Senate File 1997, as amended by conference, be adopted as the conference committee report.
With the authority, we've given the authority the staff to make all the technical corrections.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, you've heard the motion of Senator Betzel. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Oh.
Oh. God, have to we put those?
All right.
Okay, the motion passes.
It was close, not quite.
Well, we'll give you some time to think about it before the motion passes. Okay.
Thank you,
Senator. Thank you.
Good job.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep my ruler. It could come in handy.
What?
I'm going to keep this. Little treasures.
Someone wants a motion. The committee, without objection.